Hey, this is Adam Sorensen, politics producer at Time.com. Welcome back to The Call, a weekly conversation with Time's political reporters on what they've been working on and the latest from Washington. Joining me this week are Michael Scherer, Alex Altman, and Kate Pickard.
Let's talk about Justice Stevens' retirement. Michael, you had a good piece on that. Why don't you start us off?
So last time when President Obama was faced with a Supreme Court choice, his staff reviewed the legal writings and opinions about 40 people. About 9 candidates were selected as the second tier kind of finalists. From that tier, the finalists were 4: Sonia Sotomayor, who ended up getting it; Elena Kagan; Janet Napolitano, Homeland Security Secretary; and Diane Wood, who is an appellate court judge. So right now, the thinking is that those finalists logically would still be finalists and would still, having already gone through the first vetting process, be at the top of the list. But there's a lot of other people who could be mentioned, including a guy who was not on the list before, D.C. Circuit Judge Merrick Garland, and then a number of officials who are not judges. President Obama said for a long time that he would like to bring sort of the rabble into the court, so it's not just about reflecting the sort of judicial academy's pinnacle that actually the political sphere is represented as well. So names like Judiciary Committee members Sheldon Whitehouse, the senator from Rhode Island, and Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minnesota, have been floated. We'll find out in a few weeks.
Shifting gears to the Southern Republican Leadership Conference real quick. Newt Gingrich and Liz Cheney spoke last night, and then Sarah Palin, Bobby Jindal, Rick Perry spoke today. For you guys who watched it, what are kind of the big takeaways from those speeches?
I mean, I think the big takeaway is that President Obama was yesterday in Prague dealing with incredibly complex START negotiations and the diplomatic dance that is Iran and nuclear weapons. And Sarah Palin comes out in New Orleans, in a what was a great speech. I mean, it was fun to watch. It was funny. It like every third line was a one-line zinger, and says essentially she's not going to be lectured by a community organizer about all he knows about nuclear policy. And what's interesting about this is that the same with Liz Cheney, who had all those zingers. Newt Gingrich has all these zingers. This is a Republican Party that's running hard in 2012 already. I mean, that's what these may not be the candidates, but these are like end of campaign or end of primary messaging level speeches. And the Democratic Party is deep, like neck deep, in the complexities of actually governing. And so you have a situation in which these two parties are in very different places. There's no one on the Democratic side sort of doing this kind of populist barnstorming. And it seems like most everybody on the Republican side is doing it and has been doing it for a while. And that's sort of the big takeaway.
So the two candidates who are viewed as running most seriously in 2012, Mitt Romney and Tim Pawlenty, weren't at the SRLC. Why is that, and what were they up to?
I think part of that has to do with not wanting to make it this soon a 2012 event. And by staying away, they kept that. And also the Republicans are sort of, I think, the Democratic Party rules actually generally outlaw straw polls. And the Republican parties love straw polls. They straw poll, like you get 4 Republicans together in a room and they'll straw poll. You get 1 Republican, like at a bar, he'll straw poll. And so I think that has something to do with it too. Like Pawlenty is struggling right now with this perception that he is the sort of already the also-ran. I mean, he's a nice face, but he can't get a crowd. No one really knows who he is or cares. Romney is trying to maintain the idea that he's on a plane above. He was the runner-up last time. He should be, that when he comes into this race, he should be coming in at a high level. He shouldn't have to deal with the rabble.
Right. I mean, he is sort of on a whole-scale level trying to sort of angle his constituency in a different direction as that which is sort of, on display in New Orleans. I mean, his book is a substantive policy book. It decries the dangers of populism and sort of, you know, many of the policy points that are being flung around at the discussion down there. And he's also, you know, he's right now he's sort of trying to run away from a healthcare plan in Massachusetts that, you know, that he had previously supported, in which, you know, experts think is very similar to large broad elements of the one just passed and signed into law.
Yeah, Kate, why don't you talk about that a bit? Because you had a smart post about how he seems stuck. He doesn't want to talk about the similarities, or in theory, shouldn't want to talk about the similarities between the federal health care plan that just passed and his own one that he put in place in Massachusetts. But, I mean, of course he's going to get asked about it, but he's not changing the subject, and he just keeps talking about it at some length.
You know, if the presidential, you know, if the GOP primary was, you know, next month, and healthcare was the number one issue, Mitt Romney has trouble because he undoubtedly, the Massachusetts healthcare reform laws is very similar in design to the federal plan. And Romney has tried to, you know, make a distinction and say, well, mine was a state plan and states should, you know, develop their own plan for their own citizens, and this is a federal takeover. But in the end, I think if he's being attacked on healthcare, when he gets into the weeds and he tries to start explaining some of the policy differences, which he just seems to just get sucked right into that very quickly whenever he's asked about health care. He gets really wonky and tries to explain the particulars about a topic that is, you know, so divided and been so, you know, unnuanced that he really gets into trouble. I think the smart thing for Romney is to, you know, not become any more affiliated or, you know, tied to healthcare and not, you know, not talk about it too much, at least right now, because it just draws attention to that fact. I think probably his smart move is to kind of wait it out until, you know, healthcare isn't, you know, sort of the top, you know, political issue.
Kate, do you think the policy wonk in Romney really dislikes President Obama's healthcare plan as much as the politician Romney says he dislikes it?
No. Because the Massachusetts plan has not worked perfectly. They've had some cost problems and some other design flaws. But in general, they have 97% insured rate in Massachusetts. It's worked pretty well. They haven't had huge fraud problems or you know, massive state deficits because of it. So I think that you're right that Romney is a real policy wonk. And I think, you know, I'm sure he looks at the Massachusetts plan with pride, and I can't imagine that he would look at the federal plan and think it's, you know, socialist, you know, government takeover of healthcare. He knows that it's not. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Romney sort of can't help himself because he's really smart and he, you know, helped build and develop and design the plan in Massachusetts. So, I've been wondering, you know, for the last 9 or 10 months if he's been watching the, you know, Obamacare get demonized by Republicans to such a degree, what he's sort of been thinking watching that happen over the last 9 or 10 months. I mean, if healthcare, you know, was the number one issue, you know, the GOP would have, you know, totally demonized it and therefore, you know, really handicapped one of its top contenders for the nomination in the process.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
For more political news and analysis, head over to time.com/politics. Once again, I'm Adam Sorensen, and this is The Call. Tune in next week.